Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and board members. I will now call to order our Tuesday, November 15th meeting. And this evening, Supervisor Miller will give the invocation and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, if all will arise.
As we meet again to serve the people, let us be guided by the scripture of the Creator, whose pages are the leaves of the trees that surround us, whose illuminations are the stars we see in the sky at night, and whose wisdom is there for us to read in our minds, in our hearts, and in each other. Amen.
Board members, the next item is adoption of the consent agenda. It has been requested that we pull items for administrative item report, which is number 3, I, J, and K. They are the three last items dealing with the secondary road additions. So we have on consent item 1A of appointments, motion for approval. Item number 3, administrative item report of November 15, 2011, minus I, J, and K. Item number 4, intent to amend Chapter 209 of the Codified Ordinances of Loudoun County, voting precincts and polling places. Motion for approval. Item number 5, board member initiative, Heritage Commission review and evaluation of Edwards Ferry Road for proposed designation as a historic access corridor. Motion for approval. Item number 6, abandonment of segment of Belmont Ridge Road, Route 659, prescriptive right-of-way. Motion for approval. Is there a motion to approve as read? Moved by Mr. Miller, seconded by Ms. Waters. Discussion. Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to pull out the one with the courthouse grounds on administrative items.
All right. So that will be item number F. All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Any opposed? That motion will carry unanimously. And there are no requests that I'm aware of or deletions to the agenda itself. And so, and no closed session that is needed as well. Board members, I would ask that we do board comments and disclosures toward the end, not ensuring how long item number 2 will take for this evening. Administrator's comments, Mr. Hemstreet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple of quick comments. The first is getting ready for snow in the coming weeks. Excuse me. The county is launching a winter weather preparedness campaign to educate the public and employers on what to do and where to get information before, during, and after inclement weather. If you do not have an emergency preparedness plan for your family, now is the time to make one, and there are resources available at readynova.gov. That's readnova.gov. Secondly, on December 15th, the county and regional partners will be launching a new online emergency information portal that allows the public to sign up for alerts from multiple localities and receive emergency preparedness information from regional partners. More information will be online after December 15th. And then finally, I think all of you probably received this by email, but I am happy to announce that on November 28th, Joseph Wilson will start as the new Loudoun County Director of the Department of Mental Health, Substance Abuse, and Developmental Services. Mr. Wilson comes to us from Maryland and has more than 25 years of experience in the field. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Hemstreet. There are no informational items at this time. Board members, under appointments, are there any nominations to come forward? I wouldn't think so at this time. So we will move on to item number 2, which is the Dulles Corridor Metro Rail Project. Phase 2 memorandum of actually has been changed now to memorandum of agreement and not understanding. And board members, we do have some members of the public that have signed up to speak on public comment this evening. So out of respect, we will give the briefing up at this time. And when we go into public comment, I think we should allow the public to make their comment and then do the vote preceding that. Board members, last Thursday, a meeting was called by Secretary LaHood, which lasted for about four hours, three of that. Several attorneys gathered in a small room that took them that length of time to finish up two paragraphs regarding TIFIA funding, Fairfax County and MWA, and the agreement how TIFIA would work between Fairfax and MWA. And once that was done, we all agreed that the work was concluded on this agreement. We are now, as a result of that meeting, bringing it back to our respective bodies, which will be Fairfax, MWA, also Fairfax, but I'm forgetting the other, Romata, thank you, who has a language in here as well. One thing that has been going around on the internet with respect to this is there is some mistaken thought that this wipes out any opportunity for the corporate body to have a 90-day opportunity to review the project once P&E is done. That is not the case. What the agreement does is only amend the original agreement with the specifics that are written within this document. We, as a corporate body, right now, what is, I think, speculated around the 1st of March, should have all the documents with respect to the 100% P&E, the other studies that we have requested that will come along, hopefully, between December and a January time frame for the board to have. So, that does not go away. What this agreement does is, one, it has MWA agreeing to move the station from the underground to aerial. It reduces the size of the rail yard that will go on the airport's property. It will also reduce the cost of construction of the stations as it is agreed to go from concrete to steel construction, assuming at the time when construction that steel prices are less than building the stations out of concrete. It also takes and has both Fairfax County and Loudoun County agreeing to building the parking garages within the respective jurisdiction. Let me take that back. It asks both Loudoun and Fairfax to work on working with the private sector to build the garages, two in Fairfax, three in Loudoun. It also asks Fairfax County to construct the Route 28 station. We will have, by this agreement, we are agreeing to working with the private sector to try to get the parking garages built. We are not obligated to build them. They have agreed to language that we have asked for, which simply states that we will not financially build them. They will not be part of our CIP. But what we will do is work with the private sector. Now, through the discussions, Secretary LaHood has committed to TIFIA funding to both Loudoun County and Fairfax. If through this opportunity of receiving TIFIA, we do not use any of it or just part of it, the balance will go into the rail project itself to help with reducing the overall impact, the financing impact of the project. I have spoken to Mr. Hemstreet and have expressed my desire that hopefully we can work with a private partner that can build the garages using what we anticipate to be the revenue generated by the parking rates to be able to build the garages without using the TIFIA, thereby putting us in the opportunity and a position to be able to shift 100% of all the TIFIA funding into the rail project itself. If that is done, the rates at the parking garage will be a little bit higher. I can't speculate if it will be significantly or just a little bit, as we need to get back other financial documents and reports to understand that impact. But what it does is it puts the users of the rail who will be parking at the station actually paying for something that is part of the project. In these cases, with us, it will be the parking garages, and thus pushing that financing over into the toll road, or excuse me, the rail project itself. I think if there's any questions with respect to the TIFIA funding, I'm going to leave that to staff. The other thing that we had asked for was no mandatory project labor agreement. You will just see brief language in the agreement on page 11, 3.9, with respect to the PLA. It just, we have noted that this is an agreement that has been put together between MWA and the state. It was taken out of this agreement simply because there is a federal administrative order with respect to PLAs, and the secretary did not feel that he could sign a document that had an agreement between MWA and the airport's authority with respect to limiting the PLA. The state's language basically still makes it in this agreement voluntary. It makes MWA conform to state law. The language has been agreed to by obviously the governor as well as the attorney general, who has expressed concerns in the past with respect to PLAs. And assuming MWA, which I understand they are meeting tomorrow to take these items up, if they agree to it, and they hold to that, then they will receive $150 million from the state to help with part of the financing package. Mr. Hemstreet, is there anything else we need to add at this time? Board members, I will open it up for questions. Mr. Burton.
I'd like to pursue a little bit further that the PLA, I'm not quite sure I understand what you said, that it's going to be voluntary. That's the current language. What does that mean?
It is my understanding that the language that has been agreed to by the Commonwealth and those negotiating on behalf of WMATA allows for either union, and I'm talking about the primary contractor. They can either be union shop or they can be a non-union shop. Neither will be discriminated against, is my understanding, the words that is used in that document, and will allow for all to participate in bidding on the project.
What does voluntary mean? Who's
basically when we started to get into this earlier in the year, MWA had taken a vote that said that the PLA would, they wanted a mandatory PLA for the prime subcontractor. So I, perhaps I'm using the wrong word in terms of voluntary, but it will, according to what I understand, the language will, they will have to agree to do a non-mandatory PLA. So
okay, so if, they, okay, okay.
When they go out the bid, they cannot require it as part of the contract.
Okay, thank you. That clears that up. And I have one other question. You talk about the TIFIA funding. Is TIFIA a grant or is it a loan that has to be paid back?
It is a loan that has to be paid back. The advantage to those who use it, besides the fact that it is a low-interest loan, those that receive the loan do not have to start paying back on that loan until 5 years after the completion of the project. It is not a grant.
Thank you.
Ms. Buckley.
With regard to the PLA issue, is this approach similar to the approach used in Phase 1?
Yes. It's my understanding under the Phase 1 project, they hired the prime contractor, and it was only after the prime contractor was hired that he or the entity did a PLA, because they primarily use union labor, so they wanted the agreement. Other Mr. Burton, other question?
On other parts, if I may. I'd like to get on the record the current ballpark estimate of what the bill every year for debt and operating costs combined would be for Loudoun County taxpayers if we if this goes forward. I am guessing in the neighborhood of $25 to $30 million a year. Please tell me if I'm anywhere near correct.
You're near correct. If what's in the CIP currently is $315 million, and if that was a full project, which it looks like it will not be, the total expense would be about $35 million per year. But that would be over a short period of time, about 10 to 15 years, and then it would start declining as the debt would become paid off.
Is it true that the lesser report that you gave us indicates that it will be 30 years before the county sees a net positive fiscal impact from this project?
Yes, sir. That's their estimate, is that in about 30 years, we would have, you know, the net present value of the revenues coming in would basically offset the construction cost and the operating cost of the of
thank
the
you. Is it true that we don't know for sure what the tolls will be on the toll road users? Not yet. Do we have an estimate? Do we have an estimate on the schedule of when they go up or how much they'll go up? Do we know? It was not in the staff report.
They're currently doing that analysis right now. Wilbur Smith, who is the Airport Authority's advisor on these issues, is currently doing a study of what the potential toll rates would be under this. They have to do that analysis. We believe that analysis will be completed and available probably before the 100% PE is available. So the Board of Supervisors, when they make their decision, will have that information before them.
Thank you. Is it true that the lesser report indicated that if the tolls go up too quickly in the early years, we stand the possibility of losing about a fourth of the ridership on the toll road, thereby saturating the side roads?
That wasn't the lesser report. The initial reports from Wilbur Smith that they had done in some of their scenarios indicated that prior to their getting TIFIA, TIFIA makes a lot of difference because they can move a lot of the early, you know, they can make the increase more gradual over time rather than having it jump up a lot right at the very beginning. If they, you know, but prior to their to the thought of their getting TIFIA, they had scenarios that had up to a third of the current toll road users no longer using the toll road. Under TIFIA, that scenario would probably be pushed out to a considerable period so that inflation by that period of time might well offset some of the sticker shock that would result from the initial tolls. But again, all of this we'll have to see when Wilbur Smith presents their final report.
Thank you.
Other questions at this time, Mr. Delgadio?
Staff can verify that this is an agreement that's subsidiary to the bigger agreement?
The main funding agreement remains in place.
The funding agreement is the primary agreement.
And that's when 90 days from now we have an option of saying yes or no?
No, it's not. Well,
you'll receive the 100% PE and those documents somewhere around March 1st of 2012. And then the board would have 90 days from that time frame to decide if it wanted to opt out of the project.
Right.
That agreement still rules. This the MOA does not supersede that.
We've still got to get the PE. We've still got to get the feasibility studies. We still have to get the costs for everything.
Right. The current schedule is that the preliminary engineering plans will be available March 1st. That's the current schedule.
So what are the consequences? Thank you. What are the consequences of not signing this or not agreeing or designating Chairman York as in the action item and the draft motion? What are the consequences of not taking this action tonight, since we have to wait for the costs and so on, the feasibility study?
The main thing that the MOA does is it reduces the scope of the project. And so the biggest cost item that is in the project that kind of started all of this was the decision of the MWA board to go with an underground station at the Dulles Airport site. What this agreement does in large part is it requires an aerial station, which lowers the overall cost of the project by a little over $500 million. As Chairman York went through, there's other scope reductions to the project that are part of this MOA. And then there's the agreement by the counties to attempt to take another $300 million of scope out of the project and have that funded through private dollars. So that's really what this MOA does, is it reduces the scope of the project and lowers the cost of the project by about $1 billion if everything that's contemplated in the MOA happens. If the board does not approve the MOA, then ostensibly MWA could go back to an underground station for the project, which would pose a higher cost for this board to consider when it gets the 100% PE.
So a vote yes locks in the $1 billion in reduced costs, but doesn't necessarily make a final decision on the construction project or the entire scope of the entire program, of which this is just a memorandum of understanding to reduce it by $1 billion.
Correct.
Other questions at this time? Ms. Burke.
Chairman York, as you went through the different points, it struck me that everything that we asked for has been accommodated in this. So all the requests that we made have been met.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Other questions? All right, seeing none, board members, again, we'll allow public comment, and then I will, after public comment, I'll put a motion on the table with respect to that item. Item number three, which is administrative items report, we will take up item F, which is the courthouse grounds. This was simply a request to remove the corner area of the the 10 displays that we had designated as a site for displays, because there's an issue and concern with the health of the sycamore tree that is on that corner. And so it was recommended that we just remove that one particular area as an area for displays. So I will move the draft motions, which is I move that the corner site at the intersection of King and Market Streets be eliminated from use four displays on the courthouse grounds, reducing the total number of display sites from 10 to 9. Seconded by Mr. Burton. Mr. Delgadio.
Thank you. Is that where the crutch usually is for the last 20 years, staff? May I direct that to staff?
Yes.
Last year, they didn't get that spot because it was a lottery or something process-wise. Somebody else applied for it first and that kind of thing. Is that?
The rules are first come, first serve.
Now, this year, first come, first serve, did they come in this year and ask for that spot?
They applied, those individuals, but I have not been in contact with any individual as to what their preference is in terms of spots.
But they were the first because they learned last year that if they weren't the first this year, they wouldn't get the first preference.
They are the first
and
for this year.
Amen. Hallelujah. Mr. Chairman, we vote this down because they are, this is what the fight has been about, that one spot. They're, you know, this recommendation, you know, the tree is, we can go to committee or pass this on to the next board. This is the most inappropriate time right before the holiday to deny the people who are the victims of this entire process 2 years ago to now literally take away that spot that they were waiting for and have been asking for 2 years. And now we're going to take it away. Mr. Chairman, I will be voting no. I ask you all to vote no.
If I may, Julie, with respect to this, if they're number one in the queue, would they be the first to get the preferred site if this one is eliminated, or are they gone altogether?
Oh, no, they would still get their first choice. They would be first in terms of what site they're
on. All right, very good. Thank you. Further discussion, Mr. Kurtz?
Did I also read that what has happened is that particular site there under the tree is being used year-round?
We've had an applicant who for probably 4 or 5 months has submitted an application, and he was asked by the courts committee to not use that site, so his display has been farther up on Market Street,
okay,
facing the post office.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Further discussion? Ms. Waters.
Who determined that the tree couldn't handle displays under it? Because of the roots and harm to the roots and trunk?
The county has an arborist who works for Parks and Rec, and that individual provided a written summary of the condition of the tree to the courts committee. And it, on her advisement, the courts committee voted to eliminate that site from use.
So is that site going to be permanently blocked off from foot traffic?
Actually, that hasn't been determined, but it would not be a bad idea given her advice, but that has not been determined.
I don't know. I just honestly think this issue is just one that keeps coming back, and it just amazes me that we can have so much controversy about it, but we do. And I just am concerned about the timing of this and the way it's gonna look. And I don't know. I mean, we go through on with Parks and Rec fields and rotation where the fields are out of service for a certain period of time, but they can be used and the grass goes back and it's okay. You know, I don't know why you could even limit it to certain times of the year of only the holiday season that a spot like that would be available. If the tree may not be able to take it 12 months out of the year, but I don't understand how a few days is going to permanently harm the tree.
Ms. Buckley.
I will be voting no. I agree with some of the issues raised by Supervisor Waters, and here we are once again coming up on the holiday season, and this issue is coming before the board. I think the timing is completely wrong, and I think the idea proposed by Supervisor Waters is a good one. I don't understand either the damage to a display for a few weeks, and there are other options, it sounds like to me, that have not been investigated, like doing some kind of rotation. So I will not be supporting the motion.
And Mr. Miller.
Over the last 4 years, I've heard an awful lot of members of our volunteer advisory bodies complain that we don't take them very seriously. And here we have an objective assessment with a rather clearly stated reason, and all around me I'm hearing people say, I don't believe it. The timing's wrong. I have to question it. Oh, come on. And then we're disappointed when any of them express reluctance to come back and serve. This particular advisory body, I don't know if they were involved in the arborist decision, but the panel that has governed courthouse grounds use has been very blunt with me and others here I know to the effect that they don't think that the reasons associated with their recommendations have anything at all to do with what the reasons really were. And none of us even bothers to suggest that maybe they should be taken at face value. And it seems to me that this is one of those cases. But if people here think they need more information, can we rotate the use? Can we block off foot traffic? Is it really possible that an aged tree is vulnerable to spikes, wires, traffic, whatever? I would call on those of you who have said that's what you're concerned about to offer a substitute motion calling for further report so you can find out the answers to those questions rather than leaving them rhetorical on the record to be allowed to imply that you think you know that the answers are that none of that is actually true. And, you know, we had a vote recently on open band. The very day after it, the chairman of the OVS committee, who'd served there for years, told me, if you're not interested in our recommendations, I'll resign. We can keep it up, and we can run this place, or our successors can run this place without anybody's help. But I think we owe it to the people who give us advice to at least allow for the possibility that their reasons are what they say they are. And I call on those of you who have suggested that's not the case to offer a substitute motion calling for whoever made this recommendation to get a chance to come in here and explain themselves.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer a substitute motion.
What is that substitute motion, Ms. Waters?
To send it back to the Courthouse Grounds Committee for Courthouse Grounds and Facilities Committee to discuss additional options such as a rotation or whether or not the extent of the damage needs to even include cornering the section off to prevent absolutely no traffic by anyone at any time of the year. So I would ask them to further explore this question and bring back a recommendation to the full board at a future date.
Motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Delgadio. Discussion. Ms. Burke.
I have a couple questions in regard to this. When do people have to know about this? When does the decision have to be made?
The first display is scheduled to be erected, I believe, at the beginning of very beginning of December. It's before your next board meeting.
So if we send it back to the committee, no display will be allowed.
That would be correct. We wouldn't be able to notify them as to what the site selection was because we wouldn't know if the site is in play or not.
That's incorrect. They are still available until this board takes any action to remove.
Okay. You said that there was a display that was wanted to use the corner spot and they were not allowed to. They had to move up further.
That's correct.
How does that then complicate things if we've denied it to that particular display? How does it complicate it if now we're going to let it be open?
Mr. Roberts.
That is a concern. You know, I think the reason this is coming forward is the committee on its own already has implemented this policy with respect to others. They have refused the corner site to others, and now this would make it consistent and official going forward for everybody. So that's the whole reason it's here. If that hadn't happened, I don't think it would have come forward.
They
had a concern and it about the based on the arborist's concern about the usage of that corner site.
And to be fair, the way it happened was that there was only one applicant at a time because it's happened throughout the year. And so what the grounds committee did was they asked the applicant to consider a different location. And so the applicant agreed to that different location. The problem with the holiday season is all of the spots get taken. And so they really can't do that. And so that's why it's before the board.
I'm just, I don't, what, I just don't know what position that puts us in if we've denied access to one group and now we're opening it up after having denied access to that particular group. There's right. where the complication comes for me.
Well, the board has not denied access to anybody. Okay, so I want to make it clear how the process works is that each one of those applicants subsequent to the decision by the courts committee could have appealed to the board if they wanted to, and then the board would have decided whether or not to grant that location to the applicant. What happened was because there was only one applicant, they were able to work it out between the grounds committee and that applicant. However, when we have the holiday season, you're going to have more than 10 people apply. My guess is if the decision is not made on this, what will happen is the first time that corner gets denied, that person will appeal to the board, and the appeal will be before you. So that's why it's before you now.
Further discussion on the substitute?
Point of information. I just want to be sure I understand, Ms. Finstreet. There have been people who have requested to use this corner location. They have been asked by the grounds committee to use a different one, and those others have agreed.
That's correct, because there's only been one applicant at a time.
There was an open spot.
There were plenty. There are 9 other open spots.
Okay. Well, it's going to be an interesting court case. I'm available after the first.
Mr. Burton.
This is the corner lot, correct?
Correct.
Why would there be foot traffic on the corner lot?
I have no idea.
During the year, there's no one walking around that corner. They come in the sidewalk. They go up to the courthouse. They come two entrances off the two streets. There's no need for people walking around that corner. And the arborist is concerned that the foot traffic and the activity in that corner dealing with displays would be harmful. Is that's basically it, isn't it?
Arborist is concerned, has not mentioned foot traffic, has mentioned the activity related to putting up displays, taking down displays if it occurs throughout the year.
Okay, I got you.
And the weight of the display.
Thank you. I'm not going to support this, substitute motion. I think we need to deal with it and get on with life.
Further discussion on a motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed? Okay, that motion will fail 2-7 with Ms. Waters and Mr. Delgadio in favor. We're back to the main motion. Further discussion on the main motion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Let me see the hands on the nose. Okay, that motion will carry 6-3 with Mr. Delgadio, Ms. Buckley, and Ms. Waters opposed. We are to items I, J, and K, which are secondary road additions, and board members, I will support approval for items I, J, and K for secondary road additions for Braddock Corner, Section 1, secondary road additions, Writings at Blue Springs, Sections 2, 4A, and 4B. Secondary road additions, Goose Creek Bend. Is there a second? And seconded by Ms. Burke. Discussion on the motions. Ms. McJimsey.
I asked for this item to be pulled because I wanted to make sure the board was aware of what's going on at the state level. Chairman York and I just returned from the Virginia Association of Counties conference where I am the vice chair of the Transportation Committee. There's a strong movement called devolution to push the costs for construction and maintenance of secondary roads from the state down to the local level. The lion's share of local revenues comes from property owners. Were this to go through, it would mean that property owners would be paying for that. And I believe, Mr. Hemstreet, you've told me that basically the state's paying for 24% of our needs nowadays?
Yes, Supervisor, and that includes schools. The majority of that funding is for the public school system.
So the state's been paying for less and less and less. We've been picking up more and more and more. At the same time, we still are a Dillon Rural state where we do not have much
power at all at the local level, just what they allow us to do. When I asked Secretary Connaughton, he's the transportation secretary in the McDonnell administration, what options would you give us for revenue generation, since we don't have many, and that would certainly be a huge responsibility, his answer was, I'm not going to discuss that. So I will tell you, there is a rising rebellion from local governments from across the state. And if you read on page, it's on your iPads, it's page 63, the language is, streets being added to the state secondary system for maintenance is a routine matter unless some unusual problems arise. Well, I would maintain that some unusual problems are arising, thanks to this whole discussion of devolution, and I cannot in good conscience continue to add roads to the system if we're going to end up having to pay for it. There needs to be a lot of discussion about this, and I hope that the next board takes this full on, and I hope that they join BACO and go and talk with colleagues from around the state, because this is a very, very serious issue, and anybody who cares about local taxes should be all over this.
Thank you. Further discussion on a motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry 8-1 with Ms. McGimsey opposed. Board members, let us go ahead and go into our public comment. Excuse me, Ms. Burt.
May I ask a favor? I had two people I wanted to put on the Disability Service Board. And when you called for it, I was inattentive, and I didn't hear. And I wondered if I could do it at this point.
You can make the nominations. Yes, Ms.
I would like to nominate Kendall Flynn and Russell Boothby to the Disability Service Board.
All right. That will come forward at our next meeting for
thank you very much.
Approval.
I appreciate the allowing me to do that.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, those members that have signed up to speak to us tonight will be given up to 3 minutes to speak. We would ask that when your name is called that you please come forward and state your name for the record. And the light will be green for 2 minutes and then turn orange, signaling that there is 1 minute remaining. And our first speaker this evening is Gary Nicely. And staff, I need the other slips, please.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here to inquire if we have a clawback process in place to recoup our expenses for the $2.5 million the county will spend on piping clean water to Raspberry Falls. Those properties will skyrocket with clean water. My second point is, having heard for at least a year that the water wells are polluted with coliform bacteria in Raspberry Falls, I decided to go there and look at it. It hit me. Their lawn management has so saturated their lawns and the golf course that surrounds that community with chemicals, herbicides, and fertilizers. This has effectively killed microbes, enzymes, bacterium that digest or eat or breaks down the coliform bacteria. Just because we can kill dandelions, a plant that survives in below zero weather, blazing heat, extended drought, and grow a root 4 feet deep in hard pan dirt, begs a question, what will it do to you or your children? My third point or question is, why or what are we doing paying a turf management specialist at our extension service? Besides giving out bum advice such as recommending people cut grass at 3.5 inches tall, most grass is tall fescue, tall being the operative word. I see more and more commercial and residential lawns treated with chemicals and fertilizers. Our streams are becoming morbid. When we had mostly farms in Loudoun, you would see 10 or more fishermen at Route 7 in Goose Creek. Today, Goose Creek is putrid. Thank you for your time, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Nicely. Robert Whitfield, to be followed by Patricia Nicholson.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Board of Supervisors, first of all, thank you for your service and for those ending service. Good luck in your future.
Mr. Whitfield, please lift the mic up towards you. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Rob Whitfield. I'm with the Dulles Corridor Users Group. And for the last 3.5 years, I've spent most of my daily efforts in analyzing and investigating various aspects of the proposed Dulles Rail extension to Dulles and Loudoun County. You have a memorandum of agreement, which is 16 pages in length. If you go to item 4.6 on page 12, you'll see that there's a clause entitled Continuing Effective Funding Agreement, which refers to Fairfax County limitations that would say that Fairfax pays no more than 16.1% of the total Dulles Rail project costs, but there is no similar limitation on the Loudoun County obligation. I find that strange, and perhaps it was an oversight, but certainly it's just one reason that this MOA should not be accepted in its present form. The second point to make is that the transit yard, the maintenance yard at Dulles Airport, is still planned for 184 rail cars, when in fact the total number of rail cars on both phases of Dulles Rail is going to be 128. I have requested of Mr. Kubicek of WMATA several months ago to explain why they need 184 cars. I've asked Supervisor Kathy Hudgens. As is typical with both WMATA, the FTA, and MWA, answers are very hard to get. So what I would say to you is that no more than 25 to 30 rail cars are needed to be maintained at Dulles Airport, unless the expectation is that WMATA has, is that we pay for their facilities. This is properly a cost for the WMATA board, which has about $13.4 billion in capital costs projected over the next 10 years. This agreement, we don't have the environmental assessment, we don't have the traffic and revenue study, we don't even have the forecast information for ridership and revenues from the rail project. So I see no reason that you should take action tonight. You should instead instruct your chairman and negotiators to go back and get additional information to be provided to the members of the Board of Supervisors. I've previously given you various bits of information as to why we shouldn't go forward until we have fully established the feasibility of Phase 2. I continue to believe that, and I will continue to make my efforts known in that regard. So I'm sorry I don't support this resolution, this memorandum, and I ask you to get more work done and more facts provided to the public. Let's make this a public process rather than a series of private meetings being occurring downtown.
Thank you very much, sir. Patricia Nicholson to be followed by Sally Mann.
Good evening, Chairman York and members of the board. My name's Patty Nickerson. I'm president of the Dulles Corridor Rail Association. We've been advocating rail we're entering our 14th year now. You've worked very hard on these issues, and you've spent a lot of time and energy on the rail issues during the last 4 years. Some of you have served on several boards that have grappled with the Dulles Rail and how to make it happen. Well, the first phase is very much underway. Now, you also actually were the first board to approve two transit-oriented development projects in 2001 and 2002 at the end of the line at Route 772. That was a lot of foresight, since that's practically 10 years ago when you approved those projects. You also have a terrific opportunity at Route 606, which will make Loudoun the gateway to Dulles Airport and the rest of the world. Sure, there are still issues to be resolved. You're going to get these reports, as has been said. You will get the chance to opt out, the 90-day chance. We all think that there should be other funding options, that it shouldn't be just on the backs of the toll road users. We heard some options tonight, the TIFIA funding and the fact that the state's going to be contributing money. We think that as we move forward with this project, there will be other opportunities to lobby for federal and state funding and look at other potential sources. Actually, I didn't even mention the private sector funding. I thought that was an interesting point, that an important point that Tim Hemstreet made. This presents a wonderful opportunity for Loudoun County. We have to talk about the vision for the Dulles Corridor and for Loudoun County. I've traveled enough on Route 7 and the Greenway to see the congestion. This is going to give your residents and employees a wonderful way to get out of traffic. It's going to help reduce the increase in congestion. But it's also a very important economic development tool for you. You had a study done. It was, in my estimation, a very conservative study. We've been around, the metro system has been around for decades, and we've seen what it's brought to places like Washington and Arlington and Bethesda. It will take time, but over the years you will see a tremendous return on your investment. And I urge you to support moving forward with a memorandum tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Sally Mann, to be followed by Rose Ellen Ray.
My name is Sally Mann. I'm a resident of the Catoctin District. I do question the reason why the word understanding was changed to agreement. It's just, if this is just a general understanding of how to move forward with your engineering plans, that's one thing, but this seems to be an affirmation, a real agreement. It says it's enforceable. I question some of the language. And why there's a cap for Fairfax County. There's no cap for us. And are we agreeing to this estimate? It's $6.9 billion. That doesn't show any reduction in price for the aerial station. It is including still the underground cost. I would like to see also more transparency. I'd like to see the Attorney General's agreement that's been worked out. I would like to see the environmental impact statement is stale. It was, the data is from 2002. According to federal guidelines, a new environmental impact statement needs to be done. We don't have the traffic and revenue studies. We don't have the ridership study. We don't have the cost flows for tolls. We don't even know if this is feasible. And the bonds are very risky. Nobody is going to buy these bonds unless Loudoun County guarantees these bonds. There's a high likelihood of bankruptcy of this project. All of you all know that other projects have declared bankruptcy similar to this, including the Greenway in its history. We have serious questions about the funding, and we don't see why there's a rush right now to agree to this. MY hasn't agreed to it. Fairfax County hasn't agreed to it yet. The studies are coming in December. Why are you rushing to do this now? Why not put this off and let the next board look at all of the information and decide if this is good enough, if this is enough financial incentive, if this is going to make it work? I frankly have a lot of questions about the funding mechanism that the federal government is suggesting. The $150 million from the state is not going to do enough, I don't think. And also the tolls. Relying on the tolls to fund this is just unsustainable. It's going to destroy our local traffic network. So in my opinion, this is a very flawed agreement, and I don't understand why you would rush right now to embrace this when you know you don't have any of the essential information when it's coming in just a few weeks. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mann. Rose Ellen Ray, to be followed by Eric Wells.
Good evening. My name is Rose Ellen Ray. I'm now in Catoctin District, no longer in Blue Ridge. I'm asking you not to support the agreement. Consideration of Dulles Rail should not take place until the next board. The state's $150 million contribution has yet to be approved. Why the rush? I agree with Sally and Rob, who spoke ahead of me, before me. Loudoun citizens must be informed about how much they will have to pay. That is your responsibility to them. You would not buy a home without knowing the true cost and financing arrangements. You might find out that the home you want, you really can't afford. The same with rail. It just may be that Loudoun citizens can't afford a costly rail system with too much baggage. Poor management, $1 billion in unfunded maintenance costs, accidents, questionable funding sources, huge capital and operating costs, possible debt exposure, low ridership, and limited use. Metro Rail is neither errand-friendly nor delivery-friendly. We will still need cars, trucks, new and well-maintained roads. There are cheaper and faster alternatives, maybe not as glamorous, but financially safer and just as economically vibrant. Loudoun is reportedly a wealthy county, but remember that not all of its citizens are wealthy. Dulles Rail can make them a lot poorer. Wait for the facts, and I hope that they are facts, not the factoids from shoddy studies as we citizens recently experienced during the Chesapeake Bay imbroglio. Sorry to bring that up. As a country drowning in debt, we cannot afford billion-dollar mistakes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. Eric Wells to be followed by Thomas, looks like Kramer.
Chairman York, members of the board, I come here with two hats on. One is the chairman of Southland Concrete Corporation, a company founded in Loudoun County in 1973. And as most of you know me, more popularly as the as somebody with a developer hat, West Dulles Properties, and have an interest in the Route 606 station. I expressed my concerns to Chairman York about the PLA exposure in the agreement that was moving forward, and I commend Chairman York with your support for questioning the PLA as being a reasonable method for contracting for Phase 2. I was very disappointed about the information that was being put out about Phase 1 as that a mandatory PLA had existed in Phase 1, when in fact there was no mandatory PLA in Phase 1. In fact, there was no mention of PLA in the Phase 1 documents. Phase 1 wound up by the choice of Bechtel Corporation being 42% union labor and 58% merit shop labor. The majority of the labor on Phase 1 is being done by open shop, merit shop contractors. I think it was also very important from a competitiveness standpoint on Phase 2 that there not be a mandatory PLA. In my industry, the rumor was that there were only going to be three contractors who would accept a PLA agreement and therefore dramatically reducing the competitiveness of the bid process. With the revisions, it's expected that there will be seven or eight people submitting RFQs, which will give the project a good selection for the four finalists to receive the requests for bids. I am also, you know, there's been chat and talk tonight about the private side solutions to funding of Loudoun's obligations for the parking garages. That is very viable. That is in the works. There are private solutions. Loudoun County staff, headed by Mr. Hemstreet, is being very cooperative in looking at those solutions. And I'm optimistic that we are going to be able to find some to protect the taxpayers of Loudoun County, don't add to its bonding burden, and we'll be able to return savings to the project. I recommend you support the MOA as a good step forward towards an agreement that the next board can review in the spring and make sure it's what they want. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Thomas Kramer, to be followed by Daryl Borkowitz.
My name is Thomas Kramer. I'm an economist with the Dulles Rail, the Dulles Corridor Users Group. I rise to speak in opposition to this memorandum of understanding. It is premature. It is also uneconomic. I am the only person, perhaps in the world, who has circulated the economics for this project, cash flows, start to finish, step by step. I've submitted it to over 100 people around the United States, and not one person has disputed my conclusions that the cost of just driving across Fairfax County in 2018 will be $10.70, and for somebody driving on the Greenway, all the way across the Greenway, across Fairfax County, that will be $8,000 a year for a Loudoun County resident. And if they take the hot lanes that are going into effect, then the cost will be over $10,000 a year after tax, out of pocket, for people here in the county. This is a likely bankruptcy. Already you've heard, and you may recall, about the bankruptcy in 1995 and 96 of the Greenway. Approximately 90% of the toll roads around the United States have had estimates about users that have been wrong, substantially wrong, in many cases 20% of the original estimates. This toll road is likely to go bankrupt, and I would suggest that perhaps each one of you, if you support the toll road, be willing to put up at least $10,000 of your own money into the bonds for this to demonstrate that you really believe in it. I don't believe in it. I wouldn't put a dime into it. Now, the estimates have just gone up astronomically. In Senate document number 35 in the year 2000 for Virginia, the estimate was $1.9 billion. We're now at $7 billion and increasing. Just in the last couple of months, with this new MOA, the increase in capital costs have gone up 19%. And the cost reductions that were reflected in Peter Rogoff's memorandum of July 3rd, which I have, showed a substantial cost reduction of $562 million for constructing the aerial Dulles Airport station. If there's any limit to what you're willing to approve, it would be great if you would say so publicly. $10 billion? This is the big dig of Fairfax County and Loudoun. You remember the big dig with unlimited expenditures in Boston? This is another big dig, and this is likely to go bankrupt. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. Daryl Borkowitz, to be followed by David LaRocque.
Thank you. I'm Daryl Borkowitz. I live in Catoctin District. We seem to be a motivated district tonight on this issue. I sat on the MARC Citizens Advisory Committee for about 3 years. I rode MARC for about 20, 22 years, and so I had an interest in rail. Rail holds a lot of a promise in principle, but the details in financing, commuter access, commuter parking, and the official studies are important to that. I know from sitting on the MARC Citizens Advisory Committee, the biggest issue that came up for users was parking. And I was surprised to find that with this rail project, both Phase 1, that all of the parking for Phase 1 is on the south and east side of the Dulles Toll Road, and then the extension into Loudoun. There's really not a lot of parking that's associated with that. And that would seem to be an issue that should be established ahead of time and included in the funding and the financing part of it. And that seemed to be real lacking. I'm not sure how it would benefit a lot of commuters since there's such a paucity of parking. And I think it would be a problem in there, and it would make it difficult to use. The Metro has certainly benefited economically a lot of areas in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, but a lot of that took a lot of time to develop. And Loudoun County, the difference in the extension for Phase 2, Loudoun County is financing this itself, and I'm not sure how long Loudoun County could wait while that economic growth is occurring. And we might see a lot of change in businesses. I hear some rumors that businesses are talking about relocating closer to the Dulles Toll Road and other stations and into Fairfax County and out of Loudoun. And that would have an impact, and it would be interesting to know how other people are going to handle that. And so I think there's a lot of questions that need to be asked and a lot of caution as you move forward, because you don't want the Loudoun County taxpayers to get stuck with this, since the extension is really a Loudoun County-only project and is outside of the rest of the project. And so there's really not the benefit, and there's not federal financing in that. And I appreciate your time. Thank you guys for hearing the issues tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Borkowitz. David LaRocque.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to address the board. I'm here as a concerned taxpayer of Loudoun County. I don't possess the expertise that some of the speakers have, but general understanding has led me to be very concerned about the urgency that seems to be attached to moving this memorandum forward. I'm here to ask the board not to draw Loudoun County deeper into a commitment on the Phase 2 rail expansion. Excuse me, expansion. It's amazing to me to think that the Phase 2 agreement is being rushed through with preliminary engineering not complete, no information on the details of the $3.85 billion cost, a $500 to $600 million increase in the last 3 months, no amounts showing how much the counties would have to finance, including garages and access roads, no feasibility study, no commentary on why federal and state guidelines regarding the environmental impact study are being ignored, no debt and debt service schedule on debt that would be paid with tolls, no toll and revenue forecasts and analysis of the impact of additional traffic on free roads, meaning on untolled roads, rushing approvals through without adequate information and public input is the way things are done elsewhere. Hopefully, the board will choose not to allow that to happen here in Loudoun County. Thanks for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. LaRocque. Board members, Mr. LaRocque was our concluding public speaker for this evening. We will go back to item number two, and I will make a motion and then speak. Yes, Ms. Waters.
If staff is still available on this issue.
Come forward, gentlemen.
What new information would be available if we delayed this decision until the first meeting in December?
There would not. The only information that you would have is MWAW may have voted on the MOA by then. And I believe Fairfax County is scheduled on December 6th to vote. So that would, you would know the outcome of the MWAW vote.
And what happens if this decision is delayed until the first meeting in January?
The problem really becomes, what does MWAW do with the scope of the project? The MOA really requires MWAW to go with an aerial alignment at the airport.
It reduces the cost of the project.
It reduces the cost of the project in the ways that the MOA lays out. The board still has the decision to make on rail, because what the MOA does is it changes the scope of the project that was in place prior to the start of the discussions with Secretary LaHood in June. If the MOA is not accepted, then the MWAW board still controls the scope of the project, could decide to follow the scope that's in the MOA. They could decide to go back to the original underground station, but it does affect the scope of the project that would be potentially before the board in March of next year.
So by this, we would be communicating and reaffirming that we want the aerial station and that the scope would be changed to reflect that.
That's correct, as well as the other elements that are here, the reduction in the rail yard, the change in the station design to accept the steel structural elements from concrete, the other value engineering items that are included in as part of this agreement, and the board would also be saying that you're supportive of staff, us continuing our efforts to find a private sector individual or individuals or solution for the parking garages.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Board members, I will move, and please, there's a couple changes on here, not too many. I move that the Board of Supervisors authorize the chairman or his designee to sign the attached MOA, the Memorandum of Agreement, which describes the terms and conditions agreed to by each of the funding partners for financing Phase 2 of the Dulles Corridor Metro Rail Project, to be sent to the United States Department of Transportation on behalf of the board. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Buckley. And just opening comments, I truly appreciate the speakers that have come out this evening and the concern over what appears to be a rush. Well, just only agree to disagree on that. This is something we have been working on for at length. And in fact, we finally, about a month ago, had really ironed out the language that Loudoun was happy with. What has delayed about a month was an issue between Fairfax and WMATA. And that's what was finally worked out this past Thursday. This only changes the scope of the project and the expectation by two of the partners, Fairfax and Loudoun, to work to privatize the garage to help reduce the cost of the project. What it doesn't do is obligate us at the final decision. That will come sometime in March, but the way things have been going, it may be further into next year before that 90-day window comes. Hopefully not, because a decision needs to be made sooner rather than later, assuming all the information that we have asked for is available to the Board of Supervisors to make that decision before the 90-day window is up. And it is an important decision. We still don't know, even though we've reduced the scope of the project to the estimated tune of nearly $1 billion, and even though the state is obligating $150 million subject to legislative approval, even though the state has talked about lengthening the period of time that they are leasing the road to or the agreement that they have with MWA on the toll road, which will help to spread out the payback period time on any debt, we don't know the impact of what this agreement is. And it's very important that we have all that before we go into the 90-day time frame. Because if it is still nearly anywhere close to where I was earlier in the year, I have a problem with that, because I don't think our citizens can afford a 500 and some monthly bill for tolls. And then if that happens, they're going to be on the other streets, and we will have a problem with traffic. But more importantly, there won't be the revenue to pay the bonds, because nobody will afford to ride the toll road. So hopefully the impact, what we have done, has made it affordable. The other thing I want to continue to work on is, I think, quite frankly, it's an insult that the people riding the rail are not paying a penny in the ticket to go towards construction of the project. And I hope there's a way to change that, but that is a different discussion, but one hopefully as a region we can have before the 90-day time frame is up. And you're not timing. Please time. So with that, I will open it up for debate. Mr. Delgadio and then Mr. Burton.
Thank you. Not to be at odds with anyone on this board over this. This is all the good things that you've just said, Chairman York. You're right, you know. But this is my take on this. I haven't been for the Dulles Rail. Thomas Kramer calls it the big dig of Fairfax and Loudoun, with no limit on spending, a failed economic model. Commuters paying $8,000 to $10,000 per year for commuters in 2018. Ladies and gentlemen, colleagues, I have voted no on transit-oriented projects. I voted against Moorfield Station. I voted against Loudoun Station. I voted against Dulles World. I did not agree to higher density on 606 around Sterling with the county comp plan. I voted no on the Route 28 CPAM pushing higher density, residential density. So I, myself, don't see this plan economically, because what you're doing is you're making the people who drive cars pay for your dreams. I call it a nightmare. Your socialist statist mentality that you're imposing on people who buy automobiles is condemned by this supervisor. You impose on the people who drive cars this fantasy, which Mr. Kramer has documented is unworkable and is only catering to the big developers,
my goodness, will I get more than Mr. Burton and Mrs. Majimsey tonight? I hope I can get all of you to vote no. Point two, thank you again to Chairman York and this board for getting the $900 million less on costs. Thank you to the speakers, because you guys gave them the oomph. You guys gave them the spine. So thank you for coming here and giving up your night. And the studies in December, the feasibility studies, the more negotiations that we can get these people to help us with. You want us to get negotiations? We're doing very well here. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's put that in perspective. The Delgadio plan for fiscal sanity is to take the $21 million that you're throwing into the wind and not spend it on this project. Take that $21 million. You're feeling like very generous supervisors? Spend it on bus rapid transit instead of this boondoggle. We get 3 miles of mass transit. Let's buy 1,000 buses with that $21 million. Ha ha! Finance that. Then take your rail and go someplace with it, because it's fixed rail. Buses are mobile. They're flexible. And you will not have a failed and frightening administrative cabal outside of Virginia that you have to report to, which is what you're doing right now through these gentlemen. Thank you for serving us and Mr. Chairman York and the governor of Virginia. Everybody's got to report to this nameless administrative cabal. Heavy rail administrated by a failed gang.
Time is up, Mr. Delgadio. Thank you, Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From the beginning, I have expressed serious concerns about the financing scheme. I still have those concerns. I have not seen any new information significant enough to relieve those concerns. I'd ask, and I'm glad, Mr. Chairman, that you tried to bring up the business I'd asked for in the past about adding an extra fee on the ticket of the people who actually use the Metro Rail itself to help defer some of the costs, or defray, whatever the word is, cover some of the costs. Unfortunately, that has fallen on deaf ears. We're talking about 25 to 30, maybe even $35 million a year, Loudoun taxpayers putting out, 30 years before it shows positive fiscal impact to the county. So many uncertainties in how the debt is going to be serviced, what the tolls are going to be on the toll road, how large of a burden for paying this for this project will be on the backs of Loudoun commuters who drive the toll road. I do not see this financing scheme working, and I would love to be able to sit back and take the long view out beyond 30 years, but I look at the condition of Metro now and all the expenses going into it to try to maintain it, repair, replace. It's going to be, I don't think we have an idea of what the financial burden on Loudoun taxpayers and commuters is going to be. So, Mr. Chairman, I really mean reluctantly, I would love to see rail come to Dulles. But I don't see it coming in this form, in this fashion. I do not see the financing scheme as viable, and so I'm going to be voting no, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Ms. McJimsey.
What is constantly missing in our discussions of this issue is transportation and the impacts on our county and those who live here and work here. We have an airport that's in the way, and there are 8 miles that you cannot drive through. And this is one of the very last chances we have to put another transportation corridor going around the airport. Past boards of supervisors have approved gigantic developments, Brambleton, Broadlands. There are major amounts of people who we have said to them, you can live there. And the expectation is that you're going to be able to drive around or get around somehow to the rest of the region. There's an expectation there in those citizens. And we do not talk about it. All we talk about is money. And I would love if there could be parity in the discussion of what about that $70 million interchange at Belmont Ridge Road and Route 7? where's the economic impact, and why aren't we doing the analysis there? The same with transit. That we don't talk about the finance impact of those. We just say, sure, it's a road, put it in. So I wish there was more parity in our discussions. There are costs if we don't move forward with Metro. There are costs to the people who live in Ashburn and are stuck on Waxpool Road. There are costs in air quality. There are costs in the risk of constantly remaining dependent on gas. What about the costs of national security and what we've been doing to make sure that we continue to have oil? There are a lot of costs that we should be talking about. And frankly, we've got to start talking about the transportation issues. I really hope the next board and staff will send this to transportation and land use, not always finance. It's a transportation issue. And we never talk about it. And that's wrong.
Other discussion on the motion, Mr. Miller?
I sure hope this thing gets here someday. My neighbors and I have been waiting for it a long time. I think some of the value that we pay tax on and we'll never get back in our houses is predicated on the idea that they're more valuable because it's coming than they will be if it never shows up. And Mr. Burton, I understand your reluctance, but I think Mr. York has made it clear that this does not commit the next board. It commits the project and its managers to a less expensive option than they originally came here with. And in fact, the observation is rather critical that they've given in to everything we asked for. What the hell is the point of asking them if after they give in, we still don't do anything with them? If we don't say, okay, you gave what we wanted, so here's what you wanted. We have negotiated through Mr. York and with the graces of Mr. LaHood and the others involved, a compromise in the direction we asked for. And to now say, okay, you gave us everything we want, but that's not good enough. What conceivable reason will they ever have to negotiate with us again, Mr. Burton? On behalf of the constituents that I have represented for 4 years, not one of whom has really come to me and said, I wish we would not have Metro. Many have expressed the desire that it be done cost effectively, but I don't know anybody who said Metro to Loudoun would make Loudoun a worse place to live in and of itself. On behalf of them, I hope you'll give this a chance. Go ahead and vote for it, because you're not committing your constituents, your neighbors of this county to anything except the opportunity to see Metro come more cheaply than if you don't. And we've waited a long time. I don't want to leave here with this chance having been shut down by this board. If that's the way it goes, please make the next board do it.
Ms. Kurtz.
I, too, will be supporting this next phase, which in it seems to me, from what I heard this evening, we will get a clearer picture of the financing and all the other engineering that we do need to look at and which the new board needs to look at. I don't see how, when you get a preliminary report, if it's not expanded upon and answering your questions, well, how you could refuse it at this point before you have it fully developed so that you could make a clearer decision. I would also say that the idea that just in itself the metro stops that we have planned for in the past, they also are phased so that if Metro does not come, then there won't be the type of density that you're thinking will come automatically, Ms. McGimsey. So that kind of go one way or go the other way was planned when we rezoned forgotten. What is it called, that station? Moorfield Station. So, and that's been done over a decade. I think we need to let the reports come in, and then the next board will have a full picture in which they can make a decision.
Further discussion, Ms. Buckley?
It simply is what it is. And what it is has been described this evening by several people, including Chairman York and county staff. This memorandum changes the scope of the agreement. It changes the scope for the better. It provides a significant cost reduction of almost $1 billion. It is a project proposal that is better now than what it was. And the ultimate question as to whether to approve rail to Loudoun lies not here with us tonight, but it lies with the next board. The issue tonight is not whether and not who is an advocate for rail and who is not. But for the record, I am an advocate for rail, for economic development reasons and for transportation reasons. But that's not the question here. That decision is for the next board. And with all due respect, it is simply beyond me to think that there are those, and it must be very nice, to think that you have all the answers when you admittedly say there's still uncertainty, there's still questions not answered. It's beyond me how anyone could vote to cut this project mid-process. I can vote here tonight to support this because it will present to the next board a better project than the project I first looked at when I took office. The right answer tonight is yes. The right answer is to move this on, not whether you believe ultimately in rail or not, but don't cut off the process midway. Let the final decision makers make the final decision. And that's the next board.
Further discussion, Ms. Waters.
This vote is another step in the process. It's a very long process. But I agree with Ms. Buckley that it's going to put the project on a better footing for consideration, for serious consideration when the ultimate vote occurs next year. By delaying this decision or not making this decision or voting it down, it would pretty much ensure that rail wouldn't happen because the scope would stay too big, too expensive, and it would fall apart. This agreement puts it on a better footing and gives it a chance to continue, but it's not a guarantee. And the next board will have to look at all the information before them to determine if this is the best decision. I, too, am an advocate of rail to Loudoun. I can see the vision. You can be an optimist or a pessimist about it, whether it's going to be the right thing for economic development or transportation or for the community as a whole. And it'd be interesting to pose the question at the next Ashburn Community Outreach session of what happens if rail doesn't come? How would that affect people's answers about their community or their expectations? So as that community plan goes on into next year, I think that needs some greater discussion than perhaps it's gotten thus far. I'm going to support the motion because it's moving it forward. It's giving it a chance of survival to bring rail to Loudoun. But it is not a guarantee. But ultimately, if it's when you look at the finance side, the people of this county, of this state, of this region have to determine if it's valuable enough to pay for it. Because whether you pay for it out of our pot of money or the state's pot of money, it's taxpayer dollars. Or the user fees on the toll road, it's people's money. And they have to decide, is it valuable enough to be willing to pay for it? And that's the decision that I think ultimately lies with the next board. And I hope there'll be some thorough community discussion about the willingness to pay the tolls. And as far as getting a revisit on the fare card cost, good luck, because the interjurisdictions want to subsidize the thing more, not make the rates higher. There will always be that struggle between the inner and outer jurisdictions over that. But I'll be in support of this motion and look forward to seeing how it comes to an end. But I remain an optimist for rail.
Further discussion on the motion? And
Mr. Chairman, I ask for a roll call vote.
Yes, Mr. Gaudio, I will make a roll call vote at the conclusion of my closing remarks. Again, I kind of look at this vote in a way that some have worked their way through the budget, knowing that at the end of the day there may be a tax increase, but They have worked on it and voted to lower it, even at the very final vote, just to vote no against the budget. I kind of look at this as an amendment in the process. It has gotten us to where it's taken the project to be cheaper than what was forecasted in the scope of the project, with now afterwards the information to come forward to the next board to make the ultimate decision, the ultimate decision. And like others have expressed, I've actually had the opportunity to kind of work off and on this project since 1994, when George Barton asked me to work with him on this, the then sitting chairman of the Board of Supervisors. And we have, since those years, we've worked on land use plans to for rail should it come to Loudoun County. I hope it comes to Loudoun County, but it's got to be in a financially stable method to all parties involved. We just can't watch it dumped all on the back of a certain entity, and that being the folks who are on the toll road day after day trying to get to work. But this reduces the scope. Now, there are those that say this project isn't needed. Well, that's what was said about Dulles Airport back in the 60s when it was constructed. It was the white elephant project. And look at it today. It is credited for being the successful element to the region's economy. We all tout it. Every time we're at a chamber event, a committee for Dulles event, and et cetera, and the value of that airport to this region. Up front, this project will not probably have 100% capacity, but in the future, it will. It will add the needed capacity for folks to be able to get up and down that most valuable corridor and work to Washington, assuming we can make it financially work. All in favor of the motion, roll call. Mr. Burton?
No.
Mr. Delgadio?
No.
Ms. Kurtz?
Yes.
Mr. Miller?
Yes.
Ms. Buckley?
Yes.
Mr. York is a yes. Ms. McJimsey?
Aye.
Ms. Waters?
Yes.
Ms. Burke? Yes. All right, that motion will carry 7-2 with Mr. Delgadio and Mr. Burton opposed. The only thing we have left is disclosures, board members. Ms. Buckley does need to leave. Mr. Burton? Okay, Mr. Delgadio?
Nothing to disclose.
Thank you. Ms. Kurtz?
Yes, on the 9th of November, I met with Michelle Detwild and Eric Holmberger, discussed issues with the proposed entrance for MS-6 in Ashford. Also met with Jackie and Jacob Porter and Ron Wolf, Jeff Wolford and Donna Hughes. We discussed zoning determination for an existing dwelling in an AR1 cluster subdivision. Then I met again on November the 15th with Mr. Porter, Mr. Wolf, Ms. Hughes, and Mike Siegfried, Val Thomas, and Mark Stultz of the county staff, and we had a follow-up discussion regarding the zoning ordinance and their options for pursuing a BZA appeal or an ordinance amendment in the next board's term.
Very good. Mr. Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On November 14th, I had a phone call with Pat Kalani about the Lambert property application. On November 7th, I met with Roy Barnett to talk about Stone Ridge and Broadlands applications. Had to miss my son's fourth-grade musical recital tonight. Thank you, everybody, for making it worth my while.
Thank you. Ms. McJimsey?
I have no disclosures, but I just wanted to comment to all the citizens who have written to me to complain about Waxpool Road and transportation issues in Ashburn. Please, please start showing up and speaking to this board and to the next board, because otherwise I'm worried. Please come and speak to them. You've got to come in person to the government center, or else you're going to get ignored, just like we were ignored on the issues with the baseball stadium. You've got to show up and talk to the board.
Ms. Waters. Ms. Burke. All right. Board members, the only matter of disclosure is on November 9, 2011, I met with Michelle Detweiler and Eric Hornberger regarding the MS6 proposal that is before the Board of Supervisors. With that, there's no further business before this body. Excuse me, Mr. Burton.
I notice on the schedule we are scheduled for a public hearing in the middle of December. Are we going to do that?
Yes, we do have items, as far as I'm aware of, to take up that evening.
Okay.
All right. We do stand adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.